Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Mo H., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Walnut Creek, California. Today is Tuesday, May 5th, 10 a.m. Eastern Time. This is a 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. Today we are reading from the Big Book, and we are on page 155, the first paragraph, his call to the clergyman, and that one paragraph only. And today's readers are the 12 Steps, Jerry L., the 12 Traditions, Stacy H., and readers of the text are Kathy Jo P., Dawn B., and Leah S. The share ID for Monday, that's yesterday, May 4th, at the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 14,554. That's 14554. And for this morning's meeting, Tuesday, May 5th, is the 7 a.m. meeting, is 14,559. That's 14559. Our newcomer greeter is Matt F., and our announcements coordinator is Leslie, our announcements person is Leslie M. Okay, let me see. Oops. Okay, OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors, and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose, OA's fifth tradition, states each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At A Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. And I will now ask Jerry L. to read the 12 steps. Good morning, Jerry.
Good morning. This is Jerry L. from Louisiana. One, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you for letting me serve. And I pass.
Well, thank you, Jerry L., and I will now ask Stacy H. to read the 12 traditions. Good morning, Stacy.
Good morning. This is Stacy H. from Virginia, and these are the 12 traditions. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. Four, each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. Six, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. And thank you for letting me share.
Well, thank you, Stacey H. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute, and once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, and then press star 1 to mute your phone again. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. And that's the star 1 button, not the mute button on your phone. Today we resume our study of the Big Book, and we are on page 155, the first paragraph, his call to the clergyman, and we'll be studying that one paragraph only. And I will now ask Kathy Jo P. to get us started. Good morning, Kathy Jo.
Good morning. This is Kathy Jo P., a recovered compulsive overeater in Minneapolis. His call to the clergyman led him presently to a certain resident of the town who, though formally able and respected, was then nearing the nadir of alcoholic despair. It was the usual situation: home in jeopardy, wife ill, children distracted, bills in arrears, and standing damaged. He had a desperate desire to stop, but saw no way out, for he had earnestly tried many avenues of escape. Painfully aware of being somehow abnormal, the man did not fully realize what it meant to be alcoholic. And first, I read a few paragraphs before, and there, Bill W. has maybe 6 months of sobriety, and he is, I believe, in a hotel. Yes, a hotel, and he's feeling lonely and worried about some money that he needs to take care of, and he hears gay chatter in the bar. And he's thinking, maybe I should go sit in the bar, be near the gay chatter, and have a ginger ale. But his senses come to him because he is drawn near to God, and he realizes what he needs to do is find another alcoholic to help. It doesn't say he should find a guru, a clergyman to help him and counsel him. He knows he needs to get with someone else that's struggling. And he does that, and he finds somebody who, you know, in the past was very successful and respected, but now he's in the nadir of alcoholic despair, which I looked up that word, and it's like at the bottom of the lowest point of the spear. And this guy is at a bottom, and he's tried many ways out, but he knows what jumps out at me today is he's somehow abnormal, but he still doesn't know what it means to be alcoholic. And here is our friend who gets it and knows that and is able to share that with him. And what this does for me is lets me know that when I'm feeling lonely, overwhelmed, sorry for myself, worried about money. Again, I don't call the top of the totem pole in my head who might be able to help me. I help others. And that's what Bill W. did here. And every single day when I do my review, there's a question: how was I of service to others? And the service to others here is not somebody who's kind of struggling. It's somebody that's at the lowest point that needs help. And I really believe also that God gave him who he needed to work with. And I think sometimes we might get too much in our head trying to figure out who can I help, when often God gives us who we need to help. And Bill W. just obeyed that and helped that person, which indeed helped him. And I want to guess that they had gay chatter. That gay chatter he heard in the bar, those two eventually probably chuckled a lot. So with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Kathy Jo, for getting us started. And so let me remind everybody where we're at. We're on page 155, his call to the clergyman, that one paragraph only. And I'll take names in a minute. Although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. So I'm ready to take a list of names.
Larly S. in Denver.
I got Laura.
Sandy S., Florida.
Sandy S.
Lee H.
Kathleen O.
Lee H. Kathleen O.
Dawn B.
Dawn B. One more.
Sherry KB.
Sherry KB. All right, I got you, guys. Sherry KB. So I've got Laura Lee. I didn't get your last initial. You can give it to me, Laura Lee. Sandy S., Lee H., Kathleen O., Dawn B., and Sherry KB. Okay, good morning. Laura Lee.
Hi, this is Laura Lee S. in Denver, a compulsive overeater. What hit me, you guys can hear me, right?
Yes.
Thank you. Sorry. What really struck me about this paragraph was actually very similar, is the contrast between this and the previous paragraph, that most people, when given a choice between, you know, sitting in a public hotel bar with a ginger ale and enjoying themselves, or going to meet privately with a fallen physician in debt, about to lose his home, probably drunk, would find it much safer to go into the bar. And yet Bill knows that that's not the answer for him, and that this isn't, it's so paradoxical to me that, you know, coming here to talk to other people in my same situation has been the solution for me. And this is just such an amazing moment, because, you know, Bill has been staying sober for months doing this, reaching out to alcoholics who appear to be at the bottom, sharing his experience. None of them got sober. I actually Googled Dr. Bob for some reason a couple of weeks ago and saw that he had actually been trying to get sober in the Oxford groups, which is Abby, the guy who brought the message to Bill. That's where he had gotten his temporary sobriety. But it did not work for Dr. Bob. And so here, you know, Bill's been doing this for months, has no fellowship. This is the moment when the fellowship starts, that, you know, he finally meets Dr. Bob, and it really is, it's just really amazing. And I'm so grateful every time I read this, that this happened, because I still can't believe this is the solution for me. It was 7 weeks Monday of abstinence, and I'm just,
amazed and grateful. And also just want to say, I really noticed that list of home in jeopardy, wife ill, children distracted, bills unaware. It's not just drinking. It affects your entire life. And I did not realize until I got abstinent and started working the steps how much this affected my entire life, how much this affected my problems at work, my problems in relationships. You know, it's not a cure-all. It can't take care of every problem, but wow, I had no idea how this was affecting my life. And I'm so grateful that I hit a bottom and did, you know, grab onto this solution. So thank you. I pass.
Well, congratulations, Laura Lee. Next will be Sandy S., followed by Lee H. Good morning, Sandy.
Good morning. This is Sandy S. in St. Cloud, Florida. And what struck me, it's so funny, just the description of Dr. Bob, and that he had earnestly tried many avenues of escape. And that's me with the food. I've tried so many avenues to get it under control or escape the consequences or, you know, diet after whatever. And then finally, being able to just put down a certain substance, oh my gosh, what a relief. But I just totally identified with the situation of Dr. Bob in that paragraph going, oh my God, so many avenues have I tried, and thank goodness there is a solution, and it's in this book. And thank you all for your service.
Well, thank you, Sandy. Yes, Lee H., followed by Kathleen O. Good morning, Lee.
Hey, good morning. This is Lee H. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Tennessee. Thank you, God. And I listened to the early morning meeting and was so struck by it that I thought I've got to listen to this 9 o'clock meeting so I can just share that just the profoundness of how this has impacted me. And just looking up at that previous paragraph where he says he selected a church at random from the directory, I have been at these moments many times where I've had that choice. I've had to choose between the food or recovery. And, you know, this was such a spiritual reflex. To me, this is where Bill's spiritual reflex took over instead of the allergy and the, you know, the alcohol. And it is just so profound. And I just feel like it propelled him into the fifth dimension. It's many of those, as someone says, is it odd or is it God moments. And I mean, this is the precipice. And then for this man in the, you know, for the clergyman to direct him to Dr. Bob is just, it's a miracle. And there's so many miracles. I was listening to a podcast about Bill's story yesterday and just getting the backstory. And it's just an amazing thing. And I just had to speak out. And I'm starting to work with a sponsee. And it is such a blessing. And it's just the key. I mean, I just can't say enough about it. And I just want to encourage everybody that's on the line that's new to just keep going. It works if you work it. Thanks so much. This is Lee H.
And thank you, Lee H. Kathleen O, followed by Dawn B. Good morning, Kathleen.
Good morning, Mo. Good morning, everyone. It's nice to be on the line with all of you this morning. This is Kathleen O in Northern California. So nearing the nadir of alcoholic despair. And I can so relate to that, because every time I'd get to my lowest point and feel like, you know, things were hopeless, I'd go out and find another diet. And I too thought I was abnormal because I could never stick with any diet. And I went on hundreds of diets. So when I learned through this work that I really wasn't normal when it came to food, I was, you know, I'm genetically wired that when I eat certain foods, I want more and I can't stop. And when I would eat those foods, you know, everything in my body would be screaming. I'd be in pain because I was eating so much. I'd be in major discomfort. And being full had nothing to do with stopping when it came to the foods that triggered my allergy. So I too had a desperate desire to stop, but like Dr. Bob, I saw no way out. And you know, how many diets had I tried? Hundreds, literally hundreds, and nothing worked. So when I learned I had this allergy of the body, obsession of the mind, and that first I had to put down my alcoholic foods, I was promised neutrality around the food. And neutrality didn't mean that someday I was going to be able to eat a cookie or a slice of cake and suddenly wouldn't want more. Doesn't mean that at all. What it meant was I wouldn't want it anymore. And that is the miracle of this program, because I don't want that stuff anymore. The stuff that I would fantasize over, go get, binge on, it would make me crazy. I just don't want it. I can look at it today and I don't want it. So in this paragraph, Bill's carrying the message to Dr. Bob. And, you know, Bill didn't wait to be struck sober. He did the work. He picked up the phone. He called the clergyman who led him to an alcoholic struggling. And, you know, if Bill had gone back to the bar rather than the phone booth, we probably wouldn't be here today. And instead of being on this line with you, I have no doubt I would be driving to the bagel shop this morning, ordering a dozen bagels and eating them before noon and feeling that despair, that hopelessness. And there's so much hope for what we're doing today and in this program. So, you know, today, rather than going to selfish self-centeredness, resentments, fear, uneasiness, boredom, all those things come up, I can make that phone call that, you know, Bill decided to make that day. I don't need to go to the food. You know, carrying the message is, it's all about having a spiritual awakening as a result of working these steps. And we carry the message to other compulsive overeaters, and we practice these affairs, these principles in all our affairs. So not only can we get clean with the food and find neutrality around our trigger foods, but we get to grow spiritually. And it's really such an amazing thing. This message we carry will solve the problem of other compulsive overeaters who are also at their lowest point without hope. So please know if you're suffering, there's hope. Thank you, Mo. I pass.
Yeah. Thank you, Kathleen. Dawn B, followed by Sherry KB. Good morning, Dawn.
Good morning. This is Dawn B, recovered in Southern California. This is a great paragraph. And to me, it just is highlighting the last part of step 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. We tried. So, as has been said, you know, Bill, having been recovered approximately 6 months at this point, and not a one of all those people that he approached, you know, who knows, 50, 60 people he might have approached in 6 months and tried to get them to receive the message to recover, and not a one of them got it. And to me, this is a great word of encouragement to all of us as we, you know, start out being new sponsors. You know, the only thing that we need to do to be a success is to try to carry the message and not be invested in the results, to let go of the results. That's their higher powers, business. That's not our business. Our business is just to try. So we try to carry the message, taking no investment in the results, and then we also, as in step 12, we practice these principles in all our affairs. And what this highlights for me is what it says in this paragraph of the alcoholic despair, the situation all around them. It's like a bomb going off. You know, I didn't realize before I got into recovery of the devastation that was all around me as a result of my compulsive overeating, my addiction, how I had gone into myself and really turned off my emotions, my responses, withdrawn. And the responses that were given were a lot, oftentimes rage. You know, my husband never knew who he was going to get when he walked in the door. Was it going to be giddy, happy, high on my alcoholic food, binge foods, or was it going to be this raging, you know, person fighting battles that did not exist, keeping score, blaming others, as Harlan often says, we blame, we fight battles that don't exist, and we keep score. And the devastation that my addicted life brought to all those around me, my children, my husband, my home, my bills, you know, everything. It's like I say, it's like a bomb going off. And then the miracle that comes when we are given the solution from someone who's trying to be of service, like ourselves. Right. And anyway, with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Dawn B. And before I go to Sherry KB, I just want to remind everybody where we're at. We're on page 155. First paragraph, his call to the clergyman, and I'll be taking names after that. Okay, Sherry KB.
Good morning, Mo. Good morning, everybody. It's Sherry KB in Northern California. I'm very grateful, recovered compulsive overeater. Thanks so much. Good to hear you on the line, Mo, this morning, and everybody on the, thank you, Team Tuesday, for your service, and it's so good to be here. I'm so grateful for this program. Yeah, I love what people have shared. I'm just going to look at some other things here. You know, it talked about earnestly tried many avenues of escape. So what I think of is how many avenues of escape did I try? There were so many, including being in the rooms and not working the steps, or being in the rooms and not working the full steps, not finishing the steps. And so I know that when I finally, and I had done a lot of different steps and different food programs, did some crazy four steps, did, you know, wrote novels about my four steps. But when I found this group, when I found the big book, when I got a step guide and started really working the steps, things started changing for me amazingly. That's what I think of as the escapes that I've tried in and out of the rooms of OA. And, you know, it took me a while. It took decades for me to painfully admit that I was not a normal eater. It took me a long time to be convinced, because my disease wanted to convince me out of the rooms of OA to say, I'm not that bad, I'm not as bad as you. And instead, you know, I always hear about identifying in and how important that is to fully realize what it meant to be a compulsive overeater. And that's where I really learned, finally understood what it meant for me to be a true compulsive overeater, was reading the doctor's opinion, was having somebody explain it to me that it wasn't a moral issue, I wasn't a bad person, it wasn't my fault. But I can take, the important part was taking responsibility to now know that why I have this disease, that I have a twofold illness, and to do something about it. And doing something about it for me was meaning to put the food down, get into the step work, get a step guide, whatever you want to call it, and work the steps, and then start working with others. And when I think about the fact that if Bill had not been working with Bob, you know, that's what I realized, is Bill might not have stayed sober had he not worked with another, you know, person, especially Dr. Bob. And we don't hear as much about Dr. Bob as we do Bill, but I know I've heard history stories around the two of them. And, you know, without Bob, I don't think AA would exist either. It took two, and it's a we program. And without that, and without a higher power, I don't know what I'd do without it. And I'm grateful to be here and grateful to talk with all of you. And thank God for God, and I pass. Thanks, Mo.
And thank you, Sherry KB. And I just want to remind everybody that although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. So I'll now take names.
Dan L.
Carol. I got Dan.
Carol.
Michelle R.
Julie
E.B.
Julie E.B.
Jordan L.
Oh, I see. I got Gracie, and then who was after Gracie?
Jordan.
Jordan. I heard you, Jordan. Okay, I don't have all the last initials, but you'll help me. Dan L., Carol, Michelle R., Julie E.B., Gracie, and Jordan L. All right. I will, okay, Dan L., followed by Carol.
Hi, Mo. Thank you. This is Dan L., a compulsive overeater. You know, working with another alcoholic, working with another food addict, that's the best, some of the best service we can do, but any kind of service. And when I first came into the room, the 12-step rooms, you know, I heard if you want to keep what you've been so freely given, you got to give it back or you're not going to keep it. And I heard that and I believed it. It scared me, you know, it's good scare, you know, good fear. Like, if I don't give this back, if I'm not emptying ashtrays, doing whatever, you know, and that's what they did back when this book was written, making coffee, setting up chairs, making a room possible, any kind of service, working with another alcoholic, working with another food addict. That's what I got to do to keep what I've been so freely given. And I just do it because it's the right thing to do. Thank you for letting me share. I pass.
Thank you, Dan. And Carol, first initial of your last name. You're next.
My name is Carol. I'm a compulsive overeater and many other things, making progress for this moment. Mo, can I ask you where we were?
Oh, yeah, we're on page 155, the first paragraph, his call to the clergyman.
I read that, but I'd like to talk about, you know, can I talk about service?
Well, that's part of this paragraph, yeah, giving service.
Oh, okay, thank you. When I'm in a face-to-face meeting, I would come in early, set out the literature, you know, put out the books that we're going to read that particular day. And do whatever. We used to have coffee, but we don't anymore, a long time ago. There was one time that I had gone, when I went to physical therapy, I was on the bike and I was talking to a woman, and she said she had surgery, but she's having a hard time. And I said to her, well, I go to a program. I go to, you know, OA. And she goes, oh, I know. You know, I have a friend that goes there and she's really doing good. I said, well, here, let me give you my number and I'll call you. And so I did call her several times and she never answered. I left a few messages. And that's all I could do is, you know, leave a message and let her know. When you're ready, you're ready. You know, I know when I was ready, my mom told me about the program. You know, I just went because I was curious. And I went in the late 70s. I would like to tell you I got abstinent right away, and I did. I got a sponsor, I got a food plan, da-da-da. And I went back. I went in and out of the doors. I went into the swinging doors that have hinges, and I'm surprised I didn't break the hinges, the door. It had hinges on it. But today, I am working the WE program, not the ME program. I had to turn that around because it said WE of Alcoholics Anonymous. No, men and women who are just as hopeless as Bill, they have solved their problem. And today, I am working the program with my higher power, who I call Hashem, which is Hebrew for God. And I've worked too hard to where, you know, I am today. Even with this epidemic, you know, I'll sit in the house, but, you know, I'll read, I'll write, I'll call, you know, people. I'll do the footwork here. I'll go for a walk. It was nice here in Michigan. Thank you. I would even stand on my head, you know, if they told me I had to. So my name is Carol. I'm from Michigan. Can I give my telephone number?
No, not at this time. Wait until the end when they take sponsors' names and newcomers' names, okay?
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you,
Mo,
Carol.
Thank you,
yeah,
everybody.
We don't take phone numbers, but this is recorded and other people can get them.
Okay, thank you.
The next person I have is Michelle R., followed by Julie E.B. Good morning, Michelle.
Good morning to you. This is Michelle R., compulsive overeater in Bentleyville, Ohio, a very beautiful suburb of Cleveland. And I'm sure everybody else feels this way too. Reading this paragraph or any paragraph, somehow it applies to me. How did they know? You know, it's all about me. You know, it's so fascinating. And I remember the first time stepping in the rooms, looking at everybody, reading a book for alcoholics and thinking, what is wrong with these people? You know, why? I'm not an alcoholic. Well, I'm in the program about a year and a half now, and I have never understood anything better. This book is an amazing thing. Anyway, this paragraph, the first sentence, his call to the clergyman led him to do a positive thing. Recently, I've relapsed, and my mistake was not making that call. I have great difficulty reaching out to people because I feel like I'm asking for something. It's hard for me. I really have to work on this. I don't do enough 10 steps, but I just am so appreciative and grateful for the amazing people in this program. My sponsor is the most patient and loving person ever, and we're going back through the steps again, and for the several times later, and I was already to a point that I was sponsoring, and I had a wonderful sponsee, and I've been somewhat demoted to a friend, which is not a demotion really, but we are still working together. I just find that giving is the most wonderful feeling in the world, and I appreciate all of you for your service and just for being there for everybody. With that, I pass.
Well, thank you, Michelle R. Julie E.B., followed by Gracie. Good morning, Julie.
Hi, this is Julie E.B., gratefully recovered today in Colorado Springs. And, you know, this paragraph is just so important as a reminder that, you know, I can take action. I am powerless over my disease, but I can just, I mean, and he made a call. Someone said in the history that it was his 10th call that came through, but it led him to someone he could help. And I love the point that was made earlier by Kathy Jo that it wasn't to the most the recovery guru. It's a call to someone who needs help. And so making a call and someone who needs help is really important. I was definitely in the usual situation, not just the 300 pounds and bedbound and six medical specialists, and no sense of who I was or what how I could be useful in the world. But my home was in jeopardy, and there'd just been distance. I had no idea how to love myself, the world, or to be loved by my higher power. And so that was very stressful for my spouse. My oldest son just reminded me yesterday that someone criticized him online about a game he plays, you know, with people from around the world. And his thought was about a time that I yelled at him when he was 5 years old and we were moving and I was telling him he was packing wrong. He still has those memories of so long ago. And my bills were so badly in arrears, and God helped me one by one just make those financial amends. If you don't know my story, I had a legal sheet full of financial amends one at a time. So that now when we had an emergency, despite being in the middle of crisis, I was actually able to use financial resources to address an urgent sewer need. So I was not well respected. My standing was damaged. But you see, Bob, on the other hand, saw no way out. Maybe today someone can hear what I share, what someone else shares, and they too will make a call and see a way out, despite having tried, for me, every avenue of escape. So this man did not fully realize what it meant to be alcoholic, which is that the man that he's talking to, Bob, doesn't know that there's an allergy of the body that's undercutting him. So if he's not starting with that abstinence, he's just always beating his head on the bar. So that's what I have to share, and thanks for letting me share, and I hope you can make a call today.
Thank you, Julie E.B. Gracie, I don't have your last initial, followed by Jordan L. Good morning, Gracie.
Good morning, Mo. Good morning, everybody. Gracie, compulsive overeater in California. And I have nothing brilliant and different to say, but painfully aware of being somehow abnormal. The man did not fully realize what it meant to be alcoholic. And then the next paragraph, I'll just dive in there a few words, when our friend related his experience. As was mentioned, yeah, Dr. Bob was trying to stop his alcoholism, and he was like so close to the answer, but he didn't have the full picture of what it meant to be alcoholic. And what Bill W. did is to simply share his experience, and that took it over the top. That gave the answer of what the full illness was and how to deal with it. And that just tells me to cherish every one of us has our own experience. We know the basic story, the basic truths of an allergy and an obsession of the mind, but we have our details, our story, and that's what frames it for people and hits home and makes a difference. So it just strikes me how it really is worthwhile for me to pitch in here, like everybody's already talked about, do my part, do my service, tell my story, because whatever has happened to me in the past, it'll mean something to someone in the future. Thank you all so much for being here. You're such a blessing to me, and I pass.
And thank you, Gracie. Jordan L., well, after you, we may have time for one more quick share. Jordan L., good morning.
Hey, good morning, Mo. My name's Jordan L. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in Colorado this morning. So what I love about this is that is that Bill and Dr. Bob are two really different people. At least as far as they're concerned, right? As far as like who it was that Bob had hung out with in his life up until this point, and Bill had hung out with up until this point. Like, Bill's kind of this greedy guy. He hangs out with New York stockbrokers. You know, I'm sure he's done like some shady stuff. He's like all about the dough, right? He's all about making money and stuff. And Bob's kind of different. Like, Bob has already been to the Oxford groups. He is like someone, his wife is deeply religious and has been for a while now. And he's like a doctor, and he's got a different profession, and where he's like trying to help people, you know, and trying to help others, you know. And what I love about that is that Bill started with his spiritual experience started with a fellow. It started with Ebby, and he got struck sober, so to speak, and then kind of like found a God, you know, like his fellow helped him to the religious part of this, if you will, not religious, but the spiritual part of this. Whereas like Bob was different. Bob was like trying to be in tune with God. He was going to these Oxford groups. And in order to start to recover, like he needed the fellow, you know, like the other half of the equation. If you ever listen to Joe and Charlie, like they talk about that. They talk about in the chapter, there is a solution, two things. They talk about a God of our understanding, and they talk about a fellowship, and that being like the magic formula, if you will, for step two, like those two things, meaning those two things to come together and work together, you know? And I'm with Bob. Like, I was painfully aware of being somehow abnormal, and I had a bunch of normal people around me telling me, like, just eat this way, just eat that way, don't eat this, don't eat that, eat less of this, eat more of that, whatever it was, you know? And it wasn't till I fully realized what it meant to be alcoholic that the solutions those normal people were giving me would never, ever work for me.
Time.
And I found you guys. And I'm glad I did. That's all I got.
Thank you, Jordan L. So we have time for one more share. If somebody would like to share on this.
Sandy K.
W.
I heard Sandy K. first. Good morning, Sandy.
Hi, this is Sandy K. from Florida. I'm so happy that this meeting and everyone is here today. I needed to hear what I heard from the people that were sharing. Nothing helps an alcoholic like helping another alcoholic. And there's an expression, halt, hungry, angry, lonely, and tired. Very rarely have I been hungry, and very rarely have actually been lonely. But because of what's going on now, I've been lonely. And helping another food addict is what's going to help me. It's funny, I've shared with other people, and, you know, I've been writing, I've been praying, I've been doing the steps. I do sponsor. But picking up the phone and just calling a few people that I know are struggling, that's going to get, not only will it get me out of my loneliness, but it could get somebody else out of their loneliness and out of the refrigerator. And somehow or another, all these years of being in program, I forgot that. I don't just have to sponsor. I can just call people I know that are struggling, even if they don't have a sponsor, even if I'm not their sponsor. So this has helped me today realize how to get out of my funk. So thank you very much, I pass.
And thank you. We could take another quick 2-minute share. Who was that got in right with Sandy K?
Donna W.
Donna. Okay, Donna. Go ahead, Donna. Good morning.
Thanks so much, Mo. Good morning. This is Donna W. calling in from Palo Alto, California. So grateful to be on the line today, to be one of many, and to know there is a solution. And I was just thinking how, you know, about the abnormal. Like right now, the normal is to be at home and over-baking and overeating. And the abnormal is to be abstinent and work in a spiritual program. So you know what? I'm going to be grateful that I'm abnormal today. And, you know, that I have a solution even during a pandemic. It's just insane, isn't it? That this program is going to help me through anything. And that's where I need to be today, is part of we and in the solution. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Well, thank you for taking us out, Donna W. And that'll be all for today. I want to thank those of you that shared on the line and also those that gave service, Jerry L., Stacy H., Kathy Jo P., Dawn B., Leah S., and our newcomer greeter will be Matt F., followed by Leslie M., and Elaine is behind the scenes today. So we will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. And I will now ask Dawn B. to read a vision for you.
Good morning. This is Dawn B., recovered in Southern California. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right. And great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.